Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! All right, then, we've made it through to Friday, the end of the regular broadcast week here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice, the redefinition, the revival of the American conversation, the American discussion, the American debate, all issues welcome, all opinions welcome, all points of view welcome. Something that is a rarity in American media, and something that we can provide to America because we are not a member of the for-profit media. All we're interested in are facts and a look at reality without the rose-colored glasses of the for-profit media. I'm Bob Kincaid, but you know that. Welcome, however you are listening to the program. I gotta tell you, for those of you who have gotten your way through to the stream, congratulations. Yeah, it's kind of tough, you know, when you're an internet-based radio network, when your website's down, but ours is, and has been, and our webmaster, John Fox, in Sydney, Australia, is absolutely wearing himself out trying to get things back up and running. When you live on the cutting edge of technology, as I have said a million times, when you dance on that cutting razor's edge of technology, sometimes you get your little heel slashed, and that's what's happened tonight, and today, and last night, and yesterday. But it will get better, and we will get it fixed. And of course, it's worth remembering that I said the regular broadcast week. That does not, I was not speaking of the weekend schedule. And, of course, coming up this weekend, as per usual, a wonderful lineup of programs that we are proud to bring you. It will start Saturday evening around 5 o'clock Eastern Time, or a little bit thereafter, depending on how the show times out, with The Rick Smith Show from Pennsylvania. Rick Smith, a very pro-labor, pro-working family, you know, gets it right kind of guy that we are proud as punch to have affiliated with us here at the Horn. Followed by the other Rick, Horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, coming to you from Texas with Rick's Place and his own look at the week's news, what matters to him and what he hopes will matter to you. Then, of course, at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, Saturday evening, and all of these shows do loop throughout the weekend, but at 9 p.m. Saturday evening, the first run of this week's edition of Night Sounds with Billy Shears. It is for us here, the regulars of the Horn. It's a special thing, Night Sounds is. It's a little 3-hour mental health break is what it is. It's a chance to let the day and the week's news and current events and things that made you want to scream and put your head through a plate glass window just go drifting by, because you just, with Night Sounds, you just go to your happy place and let it all go. You can almost hear your relaxation teacher saying, letting go now, letting go now, letting everything go. Breathing. And everybody feels better after 3 hours of Night Sounds with Billy Shears, so I encourage you, if you haven't before, to check it out. So that's what's coming up on the weekend, and every weekend here on the Horn. And I hope we'll see you in the chat room. If you've never been to the Head On Radio Network chat room, go ye unto there, and stand not upon the order of your going, but go at once. If you, well, wait a minute, the website's down. There is a way to get directly into the chat room, and if you've never been to the chat room and you want to go to the chat room, by all means, let me know. Shoot me an email, bob@headonradio.com, and I will send you a direct link to the chat room so that you can get in and experience the real-time multimedia festival that is the Head On Radio Network experience. It's a festival, I tell you, a festival. So, you know, look, and when the website gets back up and running, there's also, of course, message boards, or a forum, as we like to call it. You know, with the classical education that I have, I can't say forum without thinking of a bunch of Horn listeners and Horn hosts walking around somewhere in a toga. But, yeah, we've got a forum there, and you can avail yourself of that as well. So you get an idea of what we're trying to do and where we're trying to go. We still have ambitions of putting some of this stuff into video form and putting it up where folks can watch it at will. And it will happen. We just don't quite know when, because it's all dictated by finances. And finances are a pain in the butt. But you know that, and you're sick to death of hearing me talk about it. Now, we are expecting here any time now, we hope, a phone call that was promised us from Congressman Dennis Kucinich's office. It will be his fifth appearance on the program, going back all the way to 2004 in the bad old days of terrestrial radio, where Head On with Bob Kincaid was born. And we're looking forward to the conversation with Congressman Kucinich, looking forward to talking about impeachment, the realities of impeachment, what it takes to make impeachment happen, how the 35 counts of his articles of impeachment came to be 35 counts, and what he will do if it is not treated with the solemnity and dignity with which articles of impeachment should be treated. We're looking forward to that phone conversation. We're looking forward to that phone call. And we're hoping that it comes through just about at any time, and I believe it's about to happen now. So, as you know, Congressman Kucinich did introduce 35 articles of impeachment against George W. Bush this week. They have been referred to the House Judiciary Committee. And we, for my part, see, I am and always will be a proud liberal Democrat. But I come at this from a different direction, because, as is my wont, I try to put myself in the shoes of someone who has actually taken an oath to the Constitution and has sat and watched as George W. Bush has trashed that most sacred of our secular documents over the course of the last long, long, interminably long 7.5 years. And I like to think that not only I, but everyone listening to this program would find impeachment of George W. Bush to be a no-brainer. It ought to be automatic. There are so many ways and so many different places that George W. Bush and his cadre and his cabal have violated the terms of the Constitution, that certainly it's something that should have happened a long, long time ago. And I believe we've got Congressman Kucinich on the line, and we will have him for you in just a moment. It's about 9 minutes past the hour. We'll be talking to Congressman Kucinich for about 30 minutes. If you've got questions for the congressman, feel free to email them to me. The email address, as you know, is bob@headonradio.com. Congressman Kucinich is on the line with us now. Congressman, thank you very much for taking time to talk to the folks out here in the Horn audience. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
I checked back on things, and this is actually your fifth appearance on the program, and we're proud to mark the occasion with something as auspicious as impeachment. Let me ask you, first of all, what kind of a response are you getting among your colleagues?
Well, there's a real concern about what's happening in our country, and with that comes a desire for action. I'm asking the members of the committee to carefully review the articles, and we are providing the supporting documentation. And when we move forward in the committee, hopefully there'll be a willingness to review that documentation in an open hearing and to bring witnesses forward to testify and to draft articles that may be for the committee to draft articles as may be required.
And with that being the case, are you in contact with the members of the Judiciary Committee? Have you had any?
I will be meeting with them next week.
And
individually.
Wonderful. Congressman Conyers has made some remarks in the past regarding impeachment. And you have said recently that if there are not hearings held, that you will bring articles back to the floor. Is there any timetable that centers on that?
The timetable would be about 30 days, roughly.
Okay, so how does the hearing process work? If you would explain that to the audience, please.
The committee would review the articles, set a date for the hearing. Ask witnesses to come in and proceed to gather testimony. If the testimony corroborates the charges in the their outline, then it would be up to the committee to make a decision whether or not it wishes to proceed with a report to the House that would recommend impeachment.
Is there sufficient time remaining in the Congress and remaining in George Bush's term for this to be a reality?
Absolutely. There's 6 months to go in the term of the president. Given the approach that this president has taken, the affairs of this nation, in the next 6 months, a lot of damage could be done.
Well,
I think that we need to secure our Constitution, and we need to move forward with hearings at the least.
Do you view what you have done with regard to these articles, Congressman, as a function of the oath you took as when you became a member of the House of Representatives?
Absolutely.
How do you convey that to other members?
Well, we have to talk about the appropriate role of Congress. We have a role to inquire into the administrative conduct, and that's what I'm doing. And, that's as important as the legislative role of Congress historically.
Well, absolutely.
So I'm moving forward to secure the democratic tradition in the United States.
And I cannot tell you how much I admire you for having the courage and the nerve to do this. I would like to think this would be automatic for anyone who has watched the constitutional depredations of the Bush administration over the last 7.5 years. Does any one of the 35 charges mean more to you or have more gravity than
others? Well, they're all serious, but I think that what's important is that we provide an opportunity for the charges to be aired openly. I think that's something that is mandatory.
I think I would
certainly taking us into a war based on lies is a huge problem.
I couldn't agree more. I would be remiss, Congressman, if I did not ask if you have had any sort of word as to the response of the House leadership, because a lot of liberals and a lot of progressives out here in America, Congressman, have been galled from day one at this phrase that was used, that impeachment was off the table. Have you had any word from Speaker Pelosi or Steny Hoyer?
The Speaker and actually the leadership of the House has made it abundantly clear that they don't have any intention of proceeding. I think it's important for members of Congress to understand that we have an obligation here to proceed according to our constitutionally mandated responsibilities. So it would be very difficult to say that impeachment is off the table and for members to understand that we're licensing illegal conduct on a part of the administration.
Well,
so this is the kind of discussion I'll be having with some of my colleagues.
For my part, I cannot understand how you can take a constitutional provision and be someone who has sworn an oath to that Constitution and declare that some provision of the Constitution does not apply for any reason. So let me ask you this. How can people who support you and support this effort you're making, Congressman, how can they convey to the Congress how very much they want a restoration of constitutional government in this country?
Call their member and ask them to read the charges and ask them to go to the committee and ask them to have hearings and to support the resolution.
Well, I have a feeling that will be done. I was told by my producer at the outset that you were very short for time, and I do appreciate the time that you have taken here. If at any time you have a little more time to discuss this in greater length,
I'd like to do that. Let's get together real soon again, and I'm really grateful for the chance to talk with you.
It is always a pleasure, and it is particularly my honor, Congressman. And I wish you the best, and anything that we can do, we will do to try to further this attempt to return this country to a constitutional form of government.
Thank you, sir.
Congressman, have a great weekend, and best of luck.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Congressman Dennis Kucinich, you heard it. The ball is not in his court. The ball is not in the so-called leadership's court. The ball is in your court, my court. If you, as a citizen of this once proud republic, value the blood that has been spilled to preserve, protect, and defend that Constitution, then you know that you have a duty. You do not have an obligation. You do not have a privilege. You do not have a right. You have a duty. And for those of you who listen to this listen to this program and the conversations we have here with any regularity at all, you know that I am not the person who treats those who share their time, the finite time of their lives, with me, with us here on the horn. I take a great responsibility and a great deal of pride. And in fact, also humility at the same time in knowing that you share that time with us. And you know that I am the last person in the world who will ever say, go ye therefore and do thus. There are a lot of people who do. Buy this, get that, call this person, yada, yada, yada. First and foremost on this program, I recognize your free will. I honor it and I cherish it. And I also make certain assumptions. I assume that a liberal progressive radio audience is not a bunch of ditto heads that have to be given their marching orders by the likes of some right-wing hate monger, and you know who I'm talking about. You know the many, many that I'm talking about. The 2,570 hours per day of right-wing hate that permeates the public airwaves of this country every day, giving marching orders, telling the right-wing authoritarian acolytes what to do, what to say, how to do it, when to do it, what to think. I don't do that. On this one, I will make an exception. If you have ever considered anything a necessity, a political necessity in your world, then please consider this that necessity. Find your congressman's phone number. You're a member of the House of Representatives. We're not talking about senators here. That comes later. Find their phone number. Find their mailing address. Go to their homepage. Use their internal email function. Do it now. Do it tomorrow. The day after tomorrow. And every day until your member of the House of Representatives stands on his or her hind legs and honors the oath that he or she took to the Constitution of the United States, for which, as I said, so many of yours, your forebears, your ancestors, your loved ones have fought and bled and even died. Reverence them. Honor them. What does it say in Henry V? Once more unto the breach, dear friends. Once more unto the breach. Can you stand once more in the breach? You heard it from Congressman Kucinich. You heard it. The leadership of the House of Representatives have made it abundantly clear that they've no intention of seeing this go forward. Steny Hoyer and Nancy Pelosi have made it abundantly clear that they have no intention of honoring the oath, the solemn and sacred oath taken on blood and bones and history, the oath they took to protect and defend and serve and honor the Constitution of the United States of America. They have no intention of honoring it. And the only way that they will is if they are compelled so to do. And the only way that they will be so compelled is if you put, by virtue of your action, the great weight of that whole body behind the restoration of our constitutional republic. I apologize. I had solicited your questions for Congressman Kucinich. I thought we were going to have a little bit more time, but Agnes was told just as he dialed in that his time was indeed very short. And I'm willing to honor that simply because I know that from past conversations he is never one to hurry away from a conversation with people that he knows support his ideas and his efforts and his endeavors. So, when he does come back, we will ask those questions. We will perhaps even open the phone lines to those questions. I want Dennis Kucinich to succeed. I yearn for him to succeed, because Dennis Kucinich's success in this endeavor this attempt to restore constitutional government is nothing less than a question of the future of this nation. Will we continue to tread the road of bones of empire, or will we return to the roots of our republic and the vision of the founders of this nation and the framers of our Constitution? You may not believe it, but it is a question that only you can answer. This is Paul Revere screaming, "The British are coming," okay? This is how grave it is. This is not about this program or any other liberal program. It's not about liberalism. It's not about being a progressive. It is about being a loving citizen of a nation that may yet be savable. I don't care who they are. Burn up your email address book. Wear it out. Send out emails imploring, begging the people that you share emails with to get behind impeachment, to get to demand, not ask, not politely inquire if, but to demand, as the sovereign employer of your elected representative in the House, to demand in no uncertain terms that he or she get behind this. And don't accept a bunch of wishy-washy, soppy, milk-toast, lick-spittle excuses. That's not politically expedient. We are at a crossroads in this country at this time where we cannot afford queries as to political expediency. We are at a place in this country at this time where political expediency may be the end of everything our forefathers and foremothers ever dreamt of. It is that grave. And I, having heard a lot of, well, you know, you got to make deals, and it's all the art of the compromise, and, you know, it's the nature of Congress to compromise, and yada, 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 yada. I've heard enough of that. At some point in all our lives, we find ourselves in that breach, and we either turn and run, or we stand and fight. And if this isn't the time to stand and fight, I don't know what is. I don't. Frankly, I'm not much interested in being told that, well, you know, man, it wouldn't be good for the political candidate. It's not bad. It's an election. You know, screw that. Now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of their country. What was true 232 years ago is every bit as true today. Do not fear failure. Do not fear ridicule. Do not fear criticism. Fear only the consequences of a failure to act on your part. I'm sorry if you are put off by me doing this marching orders business. But this is the one time that I think that it is merited, that it is warranted. Sophie emails and says, "I'm very concerned about Kucinich's safety if Pelosi and Hoyer ever do get pushed to the point where they feel they have to allow impeachment to go forward. For reasons I absolutely cannot grasp, they will protect Bush and Cheney and the current status quo." I've never heard Kucinich sound as tired and worn out as he did tonight. A wonderful American, and I hope history somewhere makes a great big space for the story of Dennis Kucinich, and I do too, Sophie, I do too. Kucinich.house.gov and Kucinich.us are two websites that you can go to learn more. And you know how to find the phone number and the homepage of your own elected member of the House. Get in touch with whatever groups you belong to. Have you affiliated yourself with any like-minded persons? There is strength in numbers. And there is hope in those numbers. And I will tell you now, and I will say this, and I frankly don't care if anyone disagrees. You're free to disagree. We'll discuss it. We'll debate it. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. You can try to tell me that it's more important, that the presidential election is more important. You can try to tell me that getting larger majorities in the House of Representatives and the Senate is more important. And while I am not one to be set in his ways, you will be hard-pressed to convince me of the correctness of that position. One of the things that has been frequently said is, there's not enough time. You just heard Congressman Kucinich say, yes, there is time. And frankly, I agree with him, because it's all about how you go about thinking about the process and how you make it happen. It requires men and women of great fortitude, men and women of great determination. These hearings must be opened in the House Judiciary Committee. Let me say that again. They must be opened in the House Judiciary Committee. And you know what? As busy as he is, Congressman Kucinich honored his commitment here and showed profound grace and was very much gracious calling in. And I hope that we can have the same level of respect and grace and support him. This isn't one of those send a dollar kind of things. All anyone's asking of you is that you pick up the phone, that you take a few seconds out of the time that you already spend behind the computer to send an email, that if you're downtown near your congressman's regional office, that you stop in and make it abundantly clear in no uncertain terms that this must happen. The time frame at present is 30 days. 30 days. What on earth has been accomplished in 30 days? Wondrous things, horrible things, millions of things have been accomplished in 30 days. And in 30 days, the American people, so very many of whom now recognize what a gang of thugs and crooks inhabit the executive branch of this government, can bring to bear the power that they hold still in this country. And it is only a question of our willingness to do it, yours and mine. So that's what that is, and that's where we begin this evening. It's Friday. 2 days of enforced silence before the call-in programs begin again on Monday. Don't let the burr fester something under your saddle or the bee get loose in your bonnet, because it'll drive you crazy all weekend long. If you got something on your mind, pick up the phone, use the phone, and get it said. What a time. I never imagined, did you? I never imagined that I would live in such a time. And yet, here we are, and we do. And yet, we do. So we'll take a little break and come back. Maybe you'll want to pick up the phone. Maybe you'll want to engage in the conversation. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Joe Shaver, Freedom's Child. Nobody quite like him. Love that tune. You know, if you go and you inspect Congressman Kucinich's 35 articles of impeachment, you will find a pattern. You will find that all the constitutional trashing that this administration has done has been a veil of lies. The entire administration is founded on lies. From the election of George Bush forward, the election was a lie, and it all goes forward as a lie after that. How bad has it gotten? The lying has gotten so bad from this administration that even Republicans are calling them on it. Even Republicans. No, really. Dick Cheney. No, him lie? Really? Yeah, the guy who got tossed out of Yale after 2 years. He spoke to the Chamber of Commerce on June the 11th, Wednesday. And in his remarks to the Chamber of Commerce, he did what Dick Cheney does. He was flacking for the oil companies. In fact, he said in his speech to the Chamber of Commerce,
"It's my own view that we should be drilling."
Yeah, my own view. Yeah, he got it in the Halliburton newsletter.
"It's my own view that we should be drilling in Anwar in an environmentally responsible way, which could increase our daily domestic oil production by as much as 1 million barrels a day. As for other locations, George Will pointed out in his column the other day that oil is being drilled right now 60 miles off the coast of Florida. But we're not doing it. The Chinese are, in cooperation with the Cuban government. Even the communists have figured out that a good answer to high prices is more supply."
There's only one problem. Of course, you know what the problem is. Richard B. Dick Big Time Cheney is a liar. No, he didn't exaggerate. No, he didn't overstate. He lied. Lied, 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 lied in that speech to the Chamber of Commerce, because lying is what Dick Cheney does so well. Now, note that claim.
"Oil is being drilled right now, 60 miles off the coast of Florida."
60 miles off the coast of Florida. And it fell to Senator Mel Martinez, of whom I am no fan. Senator Mel Martinez, whose office ginned up the memo back during, you remember the Terry Schiavo thing? It was his office that ginned up the memo that says, "We've got to make something out of this because it'll make the Democrats look bad." Yeah, they were willing to use a breathing corpse for political gain. That Mel Martinez. Yeah, him. But even he, who at one point headed the Republican National Committee, even he was compelled to point out the fact that Richard B. Dick Big Time Cheney is a liar.
"By the way, while speaking of the Chinese, we know they're looking for ways to increase their own oil production, but despite what is cited as fact here in the Senate and in other places, China is not drilling off the coast of Cuba. I've taken the time to research this issue because it created some interest in me because of my own interest in this area of the world. And according to the Congressional Research Service, China only owns one plot where they could explore. Happens to be this little green spot right here, number 3. And whether it's in production or not, that's not clear, but it is for sure on land and not offshore. This was also confirmed by the University of Miami Center for Hemispheric Policy and the fellow of that center, Jorge Piñon, who said that there is no drilling taking place offshore in Cuba by the Chinese or, according to my sources, by any other country. Reports to the contrary are simply false. They're rumor. They're akin to urban legends. China drilling off the coast of Cuba only 60 miles from the Keys. That is not taking place."
Oh, come on, Mel. Just say it. It's okay. It won't feel like ashes in your mouth. It's liberating. You'll feel free as a bird. Say it, Mel. He's lying. The Vice President of the United States is lying. You can say it, Mel. No, you can't.
"To my knowledge, there's only one company, the Spanish company Repsol, that has purchased a lease off Cuba's shore, and they tell me that they have no current plans for any production there in the foreseeable future. There is a possibility that Canadians may have something happening there, but I'm not aware of that either. So any talk of using some fabricated China-Cuba connection as an argument to change U.S. policy, in my view, has no merit."
Has no merit. Don't you love Senator speak? It's an exaggeration. It's akin to urban legend. It has no merit. One of these days, somebody's going to get elected to the Senate.
who knows how to speak good old-fashioned, plain old, unadorned, unvarnished Merkin. And then they'll look up and say, you know what? The Republicans and the people who want to, they're liars. They're just liars. And then maybe we'll start making some progress. Congressman Ed Markey, Democrat from Massachusetts, is the chairman of the House Select Committee on Energy Independence. And he said on the 11th of June, quote, even if we are, and this is important, even if we are able to drill every last drop of domestic reserves and are able to prod OPEC into further feeding our addiction by increasing capacity, we are left with a much greater problem. Our planet will choke on all that CO2. Yeah, Congressman, it will. Of course, I get the sensation that Senator Mel Martinez, is a NIMBY kind of guy. He doesn't want the offshore drilling off of Florida. Of course, a lot of Floridians don't want offshore drilling off Florida, 6 miles or 60. And I don't blame them. How much of Florida's annual revenue is tourism? Come on, anybody, just guess. How much tourism is there going to be when the beaches turn black from a spill and everything becomes a dead zone from Jacksonville to Key West? Not so much, I'm guessing. So, you know, Senator Mel Martinez says, not in my backyard. I remember the last time I got to go down to my favorite beach where I've always lived, the first place I ever saw a beach. Down to Gulf Shores, Alabama. Went down to the western end of the island there and looked off and saw in the distance oil derricks. You know, there's something about looking out to sea and seeing that vast expanse of ocean that is moving, humbling. Not so much when there's an oil platform out there.
Oh, well, Bob, you just don't appreciate the fact that we got to have that oil.
No, I don't appreciate the fact that people driving 8-mile-a-gallon Hummers have to have that oil. I don't appreciate the fact that Detroit, while the rest of the world was once again leaving them behind in the dust, they're working on electric cars and hybrid cars, that Detroit said, you know what we need to do? We need to produce a bigger gas guzzler. Yeah, we do. That's what the American people want, because that's what we tell them they want. Because we can get a big price out of that. Them big old cars, $40,000, $50,000, you betcha. And the American people who fell for it. And you know what? I'm one of them. Got me a great big old gas-guzzling pickup truck. Now, I could give you the reasons that I purchased it in the first place. And they were legitimate reasons, and they remain legitimate. Live in the country. Sometimes you got to haul stuff. A lot of times you got to haul stuff. And you know what? You can't put it in the back seat of your Corolla and do the same thing. No. You cannot haul an 8-foot sheet of drywall in a Prius. You can't. But, so I recognize my own hypocrisy in this. But that pickup truck's been off-road. That pickup truck has climbed inclines that made my wife very nervous to be climbing. They were even creepier going back down, too. Trust me, you know, throw it in four-wheel low and put it in first gear and just sort of let the truck walk itself down very slowly, and you hear the transmission going, whoo! Yeah. But, you know, Mel Martinez says, not in my backyard, but along the way, he also said Dick Cheney was lying. In, you know, the gentlest terms that he could muster. And now, of course, even Richard B. Dick Big Time Cheney has had to acknowledge that he was lying. It was, as you note, as we've noted, completely debunked. It was one of those non-denial denials. It is our understanding that although Cuba has leased out exploration blocks 60 miles off the coast of southern Florida, which is closer than American firms are allowed to operate in that area, no Chinese firms drilling there. Go F yourself. So, you know, just another day. There's only one way to stop the lying. There's only one way to stop the coming war against Iran. There's only one way to stop this administration in its tracks, and that is, everybody, come on, one, two, three, impeachment. The stakes have never been higher. Never. And we'll go to the phones. Ah, you quit on me. Doggone it. You'll have that. So, if you want to get involved in the program, go right ahead. Okay, it's that time. Goodbye, Timmy.
Timmy.
I'm going to try real hard not to be an ass about this. Tim Russert is dead. Tim Russert dropped dead today at work, 58 years old. Massive, yeah, I guess his heart just exploded in his chest. Everything shut down, just gone. And some would say that among ways to go, that's one of the better ones. No prolonged hospital stays, certainly not the misery of being eaten alive by the gods that is cancer. Just see it. Of course, Timmy died unshriven, as his faith would put it. So, by his own faith's admission, he's a roasting. Purgatory or whatever, limbo, I don't know. I don't keep up with that stuff. Want further proof of what a classy individual, what a fundamentally decent human being Dennis Kucinich is? He issued a statement on the death of Tim Russert. He said, Tim Russert established new standards for incisive analytical reporting. In a time of 24-hour news cycles and their clipped attention spans, Tim Russert could be counted on to go deep into a subject matter and make it readily understandable to masses of people. His death is a loss not only for the journalism profession, which he ennobled with his presence, but it is a loss for the nation, which will miss his commitment to making journalism a force for truth and justice. Congressman Kucinich said, my deepest condolences go out to the Russert family and to his family at NBC. That, friends and neighbors, that's class. And that doesn't just come down the pike every day. Because, you see, I have, I've got the one of the early obits right here in front of me. It says that Brian Williams called him aggressively unfancy. And the story mentions Tim Russert's Buffalo blue-collar roots, his Jesuit education, his law degree, his time spent as an aide to the late Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan of New York. And I cannot help thinking that at some point in time, much as it is described in the book, Tim Russert was taken up to that high place, that high mountain. And he was told, you can have all this, the world and its dominions, if you will but bow down and worship me, for yea, verily, I am Mammon. And by his own admission, Tim Russert did fall down, and Tim Russert did worship. He acknowledged it. I've read it, I've seen it. The description of how he talked about a conversation he had with then General Electric Chairman Jack Welch, who told him exactly what his reportage would be like. And Tim Russert, for a paycheck, agreed. And Tim Russert is dead at 58 years old. Tim Russert, who would have Democrats on and cross-examine them as though he were Clarence Darrow bringing down William Jennings Bryan at the Scopes Monkey Trial. And then have a Republican on and sit there and toss softballs to them, ask them one hard question, and the guy goes, well, you know how it is. Okay, next question. And that's sad. That is indeed sad. And who is, you know, who am I, who are any of us to say that we wouldn't make the same deal? You'd like to think you wouldn't, but in that dim, small, and dark place where you don't like to look inside your own soul, you realize that there is not a great likelihood, but there is at least some likelihood that any one of us would make that deal. To the phones. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, this is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita, how are you?
I'm okay, how are you?
I'm getting by.
I had to hang up one time and I...
Oh, was that you? Okay.
I forgot I had something on cooking.
Well, you know, when you forget those kind of things, disasters can ensue. I'm glad you remembered.
Me too.
I learned a hard lesson a couple of weeks ago. Scorched new potato soup.
Uh huh.
Sucks.
Oh.
I thought I had it on low and walked away, forgot about it, and came back and oh god, it stunk.
bummer. My daddy used to do that a lot too. He was a great cook. but he'd forget it. You know, yesterday when I called, I was going to say something about Tim Russert.
Oh, really?
Yeah, then when I came home, I had to go off a while today, and I came home, and I turned the computer on and said, Tim Russert is dead. I couldn't believe it. But, you know, that's the way it goes. I can't help but agree with you what you said about it.
Well, I hesitate to say, you got to say something, I guess, and I don't want to trash the dead, you know, there but for the grace of God go I.
Yeah, that's true. We don't know what we do until we're in something. We think we do, but... the only thing I was going to say was I read this article in... Buzzflash, somebody has sent in and said that he had asked McClellan about, don't you think maybe you should give some of the money you get from selling your book to the families of the people if you really believe that you've helped, you know. And this person that wrote said, well, what about Tim Russert? He was as much in it as McClellan.
Well, sure.
He gives some of his money.
Oh, yeah.
Can't do anything with it now.
And that's true. And I can't help but be struck by the whole, you know, ask not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. I recognize all that.
Yeah.
And I guess some would say that he did as much as he, you know, that he did great things with his life. And maybe by their estimation, he did.
I've seen a bunch of saying great things about him. But I didn't really notice until like the 2000 and thereafter was about him. And he really was one-sided. He really was.
Oh, his bias never ceased to just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and you could there are myriad clips all over the internet, and you can see it time after time after time after time. He was clearly doing the bidding of his master at GE, and
yeah.
They would of course deny it, but they have to.
Yeah.
Because the day that they don't deny it is the day that we find out that they are all, in fact, in the for-profit media, that they're all prostitutes.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes we sell our souls really cheap.
Yeah.
You know, like in the workplace.
You go up under that high mountain and the deal looks good. But you don't, but, you know, the devil never shows you the fine print.
No, he don't. And you know why Cheney and Bush and them can lie so well? They're of the father of the devil.
there is that, and it's like breathing to them.
Yeah. But anyhow, they're not even good liars either, as a rule. You know, I guess they must be good because it did fool a lot of people. And I guess I've been fooled quite a bit myself in time. But you were talking about Dennis Kucinich, you know, that was so good that he said that there was time. Because a lot of the things that they were supposed to do besides end the war and impeach him, the Congress that was elected in 2006, was they haven't been able to because Bush has done so much vetoing. And this guy is a person who can just do things. Everything he does turns to dust his whole life.
Yeah, and, I mean, Bush has vetoed a lot. There's no getting around that. But there has been a great deal of complicity on the part of the House leadership with George Bush, and there's no getting around that either. There was they have acted politically out of fear and out of political calculation and the kind and frankly we have more dead American servicemen and women thanks to the complicity of the Democratic leadership in the House of Representatives.
I totally agree. I really do. And I would love to know why. And why 500,000 signatures at one time and then another time 250,000? Why those don't mean a thing?
Well, but you know why. Because war is good for business. And as Congressman Filner, who was on the program a month or so ago, noted, there's a lot of people, Democrats and Republicans alike, for whom war has been very good business, and they are not going to vote against their own wallets. They have the common sense not to vote against their own wallets. It's the folks out here busting their ass every day for a living, Juanita, that vote against their own wallets because they get diverted with things like God, guns, gays, and Bibles, Terry Schiavo and the culture of life and all that other foolishness.
He's a closet Muslim.
Oh, yeah.
Well, my understanding of that, his mother was an atheist, and she was quite a lady.
She was a heck of a woman.
She did a lot in her short life. And
she did a pretty good job by him, it would appear.
Huh?
She did a pretty good job by Barack Obama, it would appear.
Yeah. And also, his father, understand that he was born into a Muslim family, but I think he became like an atheist. I don't think he practiced, or he just didn't practice his religion.
Well, that could very well be.
That's my understanding. And so, but I don't know. What if he was what would it matter if he was a Muslim? I have daughters who are Muslim, and they would be.
And they give you pretty good care, don't they?
Huh?
Yeah, they give you pretty good care, don't they?
And I'd rather have them, if they're good, I would rather have them than some so-called Christian doctor that don't give a happy.
Well, that's absolutely true. I go to the doctor, I want to get treated with science. I don't want anointings with oil or hands laid on me or praying over me. I want medicine.
Now,
scientific medicine.
They don't need to charge you.
Right. Well, you know, it's like that stupid Jim Inhofe commercial that we had so much fun with.
I heard them.
Yeah. He's been to Africa 29 times. Ethiopia, Zambia, Iraq. and he's quietly talked with leaders and prayed with them. Well, I'd like to know just which one of those Muslim leaders in Africa Jim Inhofe has been a-praying with. Because you know what? I don't know. If you pray with a Muslim, it might actually turn you into one for all.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to ask whether or not Jim Inhofe is a Muslim if he's been running around a-praying with him.
Yeah, you're right.
Now, you know I'm funning, and you know that I have as much respect for Islam as I have for any other religion. Okay, let's put it that way. Any other organized religion.
Believe me, I relate to that.
But, you know, Mark Levine pointed out the other day that Barak and Baruch are essentially the same word. They are cognates of Semitic languages, one being Arabic and one being Hebrew, and they both mean the same thing. Blessed. So the next time somebody says, yeah, I heard Barack Obama is a Muslim, I say, well, I heard his first name is Hebrew for blessed.
Good. Yeah, I have to remember that.
What are we going to do? And because you've got, just like Vince was talking about, you got to confront these people and make them choose. Wait a minute, he's a Muslim, but you're mad at him for attending a Christian church for 20 years? Pick one. You can't have them both. So, that's the way we accomplish this stuff. And we've got to take the teeth out of it. You know, we've got to defang the right-wing hate serpent.
Well, I guess my mind is going blank.
Well, that's all right. Just remember next time you hear somebody say that.
A lot of stuff. Did you get that article I sent you about what they said? Mary Landrieu.
Yes.
Taking George Stephanopoulos down to show him what was really going on with Katrina.
Yes, I saw that.
And then she was going to show him where they had started working. And it was all gone, except for one little Derek or whatever.
Right, right.
Because it was all for show.
Yeah, it was a fraud.
It was one of Rhodes.
But that's what this administration has done all along. I remember when George Bush appeared at a campaign. He made a campaign appearance at a high school in Parkersburg, West Virginia, Juanita. And the federal government and the Bush campaign literally, because it wasn't an air conditioned gym, they flew in air conditioners and air conditioned the gym.
Yeah.
And got it nice and cool for Dear Leader to stand and speechify in. And the minute that George was gone, they took the air conditioning out.
Uh huh.
You know, that's the MO of this gang. That's the way they operate.
You know, that makes me remember when the war first started. And, you know, our boys were having to go through the desert.
Mm-hmm.
And our boys and girls.
Yeah.
That's what I call them. You know, they're like my children, you know.
Sure.
Meaning harm by it.
No.
But anyway, it's, and they were going through all of that. And then my son's friend, he was all of that. And he said they ran out of stuff to drink, ran out of food and everything when they went in. He was in that shock and awe. And I was thinking about how they were in what the heat was like 125 or something, and they had all that heavy weight on them. And I never will forget Bush was down in at his place in Texas, Crawford, and there were some people there, and they were outside. And he said, y'all come on in now before you pass out from the heat. And I thought, well, you sucker, you don't.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Our troops over there suffering and going through all that, and they didn't have enough equipment, and they didn't have enough to drink.
Oh, no, the whole thing was done on the cheap. And then, and you remember when Rumsfeld came out and said, well, you go to war with the army you have, not the one you want.
Right. And I used to watch those hearings that he would have. He would be in front of the Congress and also Wolfowitz, and they would be told about the armor needed, and they would be start writing down, you know, like they'd never heard it before. Every time
Mm-hmm.
Like it was new news.
Oh, I know. Well, it's all for show. But it's, again, every last bit of it is for show. The whole thing is like a false front Western movie set. You know, it looks like there's a bunch of stuff there, but there's no real buildings.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Well, Juanita, I thank you very much. I'm going to roll along.
Okay, you're welcome, and have a good weekend.
You too. Take care now. Bye. Wait, we didn't get our view update. Juanita, we didn't get our view update. But that's okay. We'll catch that maybe Monday. So we'll take a little break, and we'll come back. Light up the phones if you want to. Like I said, it's Friday. You don't get another chance for the next couple of days. Never called the program before? Try it. See, anybody, we've never lost a caller yet. You'd be surprised how easy it is. Take a little break and come back with a second hour. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Friday. Light the phones up. Ring on in, 877-443-2366.
877-4-HEAD-ON, 304-658-3333 on your own nickel. And without any ado further or unfurther, without any ado whatsoever, we will go immediately back to the phones. And hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Okay.
No, there's no ado here.
No, I got we scraped up all our ado and put it in a little bag.
Oh God, I feel like for the last little bit I feel like I've been dancing with architecture because I didn't know Tim Russert. I don't know what he must be like, a empty suit talking head guy in TV, huh?
Yeah, didn't miss nothing. He's been the host of Meet the Prestitutes since 1991.
Oh.
And was just at work today when he went, ah! And, you know, like Monty Python animation, just went, you know.
Sorry. God.
You know what I'm talking about, though, when you know, the stuff, the Monty Python, you know, the guy goes, ah! And thump, falls over side. Yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah, I know that one. Oh, too bad you have to go out when you're working, huh?
Yeah, well, it's startup. I have real problems with the way the man did his job.
Oh.
And of course, you know, there always is that there for the grace of God impulse and that ask not for whom the bell tolls impulse. And having been fairly sick in the last couple of weeks, I take that kind of stuff kind of seriously.
Yeah, I know you do.
And, you know, history of heart disease in the family, take it seriously. Take a lot of things seriously. You know, at some point in time, I've got to sit down, Agnes got to sit down with our daughters and say, you know, listen, you got to take breast cancer seriously because your grandmother had it. And so there's Tim Russert, 58 years old, with undeniably exquisite health coverage.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
And what? He's got a show that he does once a week. He pops up for an hour here and there on MSNBC, and he's a blah, 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 blah correspondent and yada, yada, yada. He's got a monstrous team of people working around him so that all he has to do is say the word and stuff gets done.
Mm-hmm.
And this in Washington, D.C., and this guy, physicals are good once a year, you know, for guys, you get the thing with the rubber glove and everything else that's nasty that goes with it. The ladies get the grope and the smashing and, you know, but, you know, you do it once a year because you don't want to keel over when you're 58.
Well, true, maybe. But on the other side of that is to take everything seriously but life, you know. I mean, this ain't even real here. I mean, how serious can you take, never mind, I don't know anything about TV, so.
Right, and it's worthwhile remembering the words of Kurt Vonnegut, who spent a lot of his later years trying to die. Tried to smoke himself to death, among other things, and then wound up falling down, busting his head, and, you know, going that way, laying in a coma in a hospital bed. But he said, the older I get, the more I'm convinced that that we are put here mostly just to dance.
That's right. That's right. Without music.
And I've heard a lot and seen a good bit of Bill Hicks, the late, great Bill Hicks, and he said something similar. You know, he was the one who coined the phrase, you know, you gotta get your third eye squeegeed clean.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those two positions are far healthier than this business of thinking that, well, that what goes on in Washington, D.C., now there I was lecturing in the first hour, and now I'm going to say that what goes on in Washington, D.C. doesn't matter. It does and it doesn't.
A little Friday afternoon cognitive dissonance is good for everybody.
Oh, yeah, and I'm going, I mean, my horizontal hold is just all out of whack at this point, so, you know, please stand by.
Yeah, right. Join the festival.
Yeah, it's a festival.
You ass.
I am.
I caught that one. And I can't even bother. If you have to wear a toga to get in the forum, I don't want to go.
No, togas are, hell, clothing's optional in the forum. You know, we do naked radio here from time to time.
Yeah, it's fixing to get that way here. We got to be about 107 in a couple of days, but, well. This is the, Juanita fell down on giving the view review, but we can.
Well, I got an email from her saying that the reason she didn't do it was because it was intolerably dull this week.
Oh.
Minimal politics, she said. She said she missed it today. But June 20th, Michelle Obama will be on.
Oh.
And she'll have the whole show as a guest host.
Wow. That would make me want to go find a TV. I don't even know who Michelle, I mean, I don't even know what she looks like. How would I know it was her on? They'd announce her, right? Well, another thing that's striking me as funny, just tickles my sense of irony, is that all the flooding they're getting in Iowa is about 300 miles east of Mother Abigail's homestead for those band fans, Stephen King's band.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, Mother Abigail, yeah, Polk County, Nebraska. Anyway, when I was listening to them, I've been all over in that part of the country, and I thought, oh my God, they're evacuating downtown. Well, that's going to be a mess.
Well, you know, when you're dealing with something like the Mississippi or the Missouri River and levees,
man-made. This is all, you know.
Well, it's like burglars and locks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every time there's a better lock made, you'll get a better class of burglar, a better class of foot pad, better class of lock pick.
Mm-hmm.
And every time you build a better levee, you're gonna get a meaner river.
And you put a good lock in it, and then you're still gonna get a meaner river.
Yeah.
Oh, ooh, little pun. Well, anyway, remember when you said that when I was talking about the truck stop, the guy at the truck stop getting his gas drilled out of his tank, and you said, Mad Max world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it is. Well, I've been kind of looking at the world through those lens for the past week or two, and thought, well, I want to come in and do a Mad Max review of the world, because connecting the dots, like looking at the levees and the dams and the rivers that are flooding, and I mean, it's a mess out here. It's a big mess, and some things are very, very frightening. Some of them are very ironic, and I just think, oh.
Well, look, first and foremost, Kate, let's acknowledge that stuff like this is a failure of government. And just as Katrina was the manifestation of Grover Norquist's statement that he wanted to weaken the government until it could be drowned in a bathtub,
Yeah,
I hope they put that on his headstone. I really do. I hope they bury him in a bathtub.
Well, I guess you're right. I guess everything would be government. I don't listen to regular media, but just like BBC and shortwave and satellite foreign radio and stuff, and so it gives me an opportunity to connect some very big dots for people who might not have the time or the patience or the electronic equipment to plug into all that stuff. And I'm not, coming home from Mississippi this time, I was watching for signs of this kind of the deterioration of the infrastructure. And besides I-40 being a big mess, there's some brand new 40 through New Mexico finally, but the parts that aren't new along 40 through Texas and New Mexico are horrible. You have to drive in the left lane to keep getting beat to death, and you can tell who the rookies are on the highway. They're all on the right lane getting bounced around.
Well, yeah, to the point that they should just rename the road under construction.
Yeah, well,
or rename it road work ahead.
Yeah. Man at work.
Yeah, I took Men at Work from Amarillo to Albuquerque. Yeah,
and there's a cutoff, and don't plan on the rest area, because a lot of the rest areas are closed along there. Places where I was going to live for a day or two and take a break and relax, and I get up there and I think, oh man, right over. Let's see, it's right over this next hill around that rest area closed. So some of them were closed for maintenance for. Upgrading and, you know, remodeling, but a lot of them were just closed, but I assume like they do here in Arizona, because there's nobody to maintain them, and they've lost the contracts for the civilians, and the state just can't afford them anymore, so the rest areas are closed, and they've stopped in a lot of areas. It's really spooky. Even back in Alabama, they have stopped cutting the grass along the side of the road, and so...
And there's but that's what I'm getting at, Kate. There is a meaning to all of that. There's meaning behind all that.
And most people tend to see it, and, you know, it's a drive-by. Oh, damn, rest area is closed. How about that?
Right. Oh, and, we'll just go on.
And it's only after you've made a drive, say, you know, from lower Alabama all the way to Arizona, and you've seen the things sort of pile up one upon the next, that for some of us, you, me, lots of liberals, progressives, Democrats, decent people, that we kind of go, wait a minute. This doesn't just happen.
Yeah, that's kind of what this segment's about. It's like I'm just kind of, my mouth drops open when I hear or see something I'm reading along on the internet and go, what? Back up there and do the repairing, you know, the bridge in Minnesota and all the bridges that are badly constructed and the things that are falling apart. I read a little place the other day that asphalt's gone up from $320 a ton. Up to six, but that was in April, just this April, like 2 months ago, and now it's up to $600, and it's going up.
Yeah, it's not going to stop. Yeah, I put fuel in the gas guzzler today at $4.10 a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
And heard somebody who apparently, you know, pays the bills at one of these convenience stores say, we're already being told that it's going to be $7 by the 4th of July.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's a hell of a jump.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, it's believable.
And when people are, they're ranting, I hear all over, people are ranting and blaming this, blaming that. But it's speculators. There's no shortage. I mean, the fuel, they're down. They say that the fuel reserves are down and yada, yada, yada. But it's I don't even want to go into that.
Well,
I don't know anything.
So happened that I believe it was yesterday that we re-ran Mark Levine's early May show on the price of gasoline, and the guy that he had on from Public Citizen, I don't remember his name, Kate, but he made it abundantly clear that it is the speculators who are driving this. It's gamblers. It's guys at the roulette wheel. It's people who are trying to make a buck off the misery of the American people.
That's right.
And something I didn't know that was pointed out on Mark's show is that while the New York Mercantile Exchange, NYMEX, is regulated, that there's a bunch of other the commodity markets that are absolute freewheeling, you know, Dodge City, unregulated, you know, Katie bar the door kind of stuff, and that it is all a direct outflow of the bad old days of Enron.
That's right. And our friend on the floor in Chicago, well, she's not anymore, in Chicago, said that the people up there on the floor that she's still in contact with are absolutely aghast. I mean, they're just quivering in their skin. They have never, ever seen it like this before, and it's such a big, convoluted ball of yarn that it will never, ever get
sorted.
Yeah, right. And you know, with the infrastructure, it's just if just connecting the bridge to the asphalt, to the fuel, to the fertilizer, and the help that the state can't hire. I mean, some states are even starting to consider putting convicts not alongside the road to pick up and do the debris pickup, but to work as sanitation workers because they can't afford to help. They can't afford to hire the state workers, so they can. They've already got these people sitting in jail. They may as well be using them. Pretty good idea. It's a good way to get out of jail. You know, good way to put your manpower to work.
Well, you know how I am with old movies and things like that. One of my favorite comedies is a 1978 film featuring Alan Arkin and Peter Falk, and it's called The In-Laws. And Peter Falk is a CIA agent who is involved in this complicated scheme that's busting a cartel that's trying to counterfeit all the world's currencies in order to cause a vast global economic collapse. And in the course of describing, it's one of the funniest movies I know. And in the course of describing it to meek and mild-mannered Alan Arkin in a deli in New York, he says the following. And you know, I used to. It's one of those things. So much has been taken away from me and taken away from us. The stuff that I used to laugh at, I don't get to laugh at anymore. And this is one of them.
Jesus. I don't know what people are going to do when a six-pack of Budweiser costs $1,200.
Well, that'll be off.
You know what? I don't know what people are going to do when a six-pack of Budweiser costs $1,200.
No, it's not. It's getting so close to that. So close. Anyway. the $1,200. Who the hell would buy a six pack of Bud for $5 anyway? Never mind.
No, I feel the same way.
If Bud's going to be EU Bud, this EU Bud's for you.
Yeah. Well, and then he follows up on that statement, and it's a beautiful thing.
You've got a collapse of confidence in the currency. People are going to panic.
Yeah.
There's going to be gold riots, atonal music, political chaos, right. Mass suicide, right?
Yeah.
It's Germany before Hitler. Uh-huh. You can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not exactly.
It's not funny anymore.
No, it's not. It's not.
Although I love the line about atonal music.
For a minute, I thought he said $8 music.
My atonal music.
We got that already. The farmers over in Kern County around the Bakersfield area, they're starting to report a lot of gas thefts, and sometimes the hits are never less than $1,000 a gallon a night. Big people coming in and stealing out of their big equipment, the big farm equipment.
Yeah.
And he said that. Best thing I can do is just go out there and sit with a shotgun. That ain't no other way to catch them. A U-Haul outfit in Ohio reported that their trucks all got capped in the yard. I think that was just this week. And some little blurb I heard, I think it was Camden, New Jersey. It was either county or state cars. The employees were coming in, and I think they were charging state gas for their own vehicles, and they all got popped. So it's not, and this isn't even classy enough to be called anarchy. I mean, this is just survival.
Yeah, you put that right. It's not classy enough to be called anarchy. Another one that I ran across, didn't make any mention of, but falls into between the lines of this conversation, Kate. Some Roman Catholic church out and about recently reported its Jesus got stolen.
Oh,
you know, it was a Roman Catholic church, and it had an outdoor crucifix with a great big green Jesus.
Wow.
And the speculation was that the joke's on the thief. It turns out the great big green Jesus that looked like tarnished. The oxidized copper was plaster.
Yeah, I was going to say it was either copper or, and then they're going to blame the kids for it, and I don't know many kids that would give a flip about that, but, that wouldn't be unless they were just out on a dare.
But, the price of copper, the price of all basic commodities has gone insane.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where it ends. And that's what I find to be so galling with somebody like Andrea Mitchell, who's married to Alan Greenspan, the Ayn Rand acolyte.
I know.
and for her sort of snobbish elitist, this is three nights in a row I'm talking about. People are probably sick of hearing it by now. But that business, what's Barack Obama doing down there? I mean, that's redneck country. That's almost Appalachian.
Yeah. She's, God.
I'm surprised that in eulogizing Tim Russert, and he was one of her colleagues, she didn't say, he came from a blue-collar background. Mm-hmm. Blue-collar, that's like redneck. It's almost Appalachian. Ew.
Ew. The grandmas and grandpas who are not going to get fed, I mean, how long is it going to take us to recognize that, like, when Meals on Wheels have run out of gas?
Oh, I got another one. Yeah, and I got one of those, too.
In a whole lot of communities, they've just stopped feeding. They've just stopped feeding. And, I mean, what do you do? They're cutting back on school hours in some places because they can't afford to run the school buses, and so... I didn't understand how they were going to do it. It sounded kind of complicated about changing the hours and putting two batches of kids on one bus or something. I don't know.
I've held back on this story too because it sort of you know, I wait for things because I know that a door is going to open and that it'll make sense.
You better start cleaning out your stacks. It's Friday afternoon, boys.
Exactly. Headline, high costs land on school cafeteria trays.
Mm.
Now, bear in mind, the federal government spent buku bajillion dollars paying that slaughterhouse in Chico, California, that was serving downer cattle to school children.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my kids ate it. Kids all over the country. Any kid who goes to a public school and, you know, whether you're paying for lunch or it's, mm-hmm. no, it's the same food. It was in tacos, pizza, whatever. Mm-hmm. They ate that downer beef.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that stuff that, you know, you shouldn't be able to give that away. But the subhead to this story, high cost land on school cafeteria trays, rising food fuel to drive up student meal prices by as much as 50%. And Alex Johnson, whose story it is, says, when America's school children return to class in the fall, they will learn a painful lesson in economics. Higher food and fuel prices are forcing up the price of school breakfasts and lunches across the country by as much as 50% in some districts.
Wow.
Is there anybody inside the Beltway in Washington that knows there is a problem?
I don't know.
I mean,
They lost a lot of power yesterday in a storm, or a generator went out, or a power plant went out or something, and D.C. just came down. They had to put the White House and Capitol on generator.
And all we put into the school lunch program is $8.2 billion a year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, sure.
That's not even a month in Iraq, is it?
Mm-mm. Oh, hell no. No. The shelving, even, I mean, I don't know if anybody's talked about this, but the shelf around in the stores, I've had to take the elders to town a couple of times last week, and I popped in to get Alaska salmon at the Family Dollar store, and they have their shelves are just kind of getting emptier and emptier, and the grocery stores, that some of them are like way overstocked, and other ones are really thin,
I see it in our grocery stores here.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff that, and it's not like it's stuff that was on sale and everybody wiped it out, mm-hmm. or that it was something exotic and maybe it wasn't restocked. You know, I pay attention to these things after the last two or three weeks. Chicken broth, beef broth, okay, and it ain't there.
I said,
you know, you're going to be getting more of this in. And the grocery store worker, good union worker, member of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union.
Yes, sir.
Said, don't know. Used to be, we knew what was going to be on the trucks. Now we don't.
Right. The food riots around the, another startling thing is that the food riots around the globe are getting horrendous, just horrendous. And I mean, I guess we don't have any sense of that here because we don't see it on Fox at 10 o'clock or Fox at 9 or whatever Fox does in the waning hours of the day. But that it's getting pretty spooky around the world. And
Brevard County, Florida, for heaven's sakes. Mm-hmm. Just data out of this story. Brevard County, Florida's school lunches are going to be 50% more expensive. And just, you know, consider the number. And this, there is, Kate, and you do a lovely job of it. There is a commonality between potholed roads and collapsing bridges and school lunches. The federal government, the cheapest school lunch is $2.66 to prepare.
Wow, it's old. They used to be a quarter.
Well, no, I mean, that's, you know, they don't charge that amount.
Oh,
but
okay.
But the cost is $2.66. The federal subsidy for a child eating a free lunch, however, is $2.47.
Wow.
So there's an immediate shortfall, and that's last year's budget. That's before the rising food costs catch up with it.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, you know, well, it's like Peter Godbold reported on his show a couple of nights ago. Here in West Virginia, we've got Republican legislators who are hell-bent on protecting marriage. Because, you know, all the other problems have been solved, and they've quit blowing up the mountains, and all the school children have enough to eat, and it's not downer cattle that they're eating. And so now we can get around to protecting marriage.
Well, if I had a marriage, I guess I'd want it protected.
Well, I didn't know anybody was after mine.
The food that we're not going to get because we import or export, I mean, we're not, well, the for one thing, the riots that are happening around the globe are scary to me because we haven't gotten there yet in this country, and we're going to tolerate the $2.70 whatever cents school lunch, or we're going to send the kids to school with sandwiches, or we're not going to, they're all going to be malnourished because we're feeding them junk or whatever at school, because that's all the school can afford, whatever. But it hasn't hit here yet, it to the degree that it has gone on.
No, but it's a goner.
That's what's so frightening to me, that nobody, does anybody understand the fertilizer riots in India? I mean, the farmers can't put their crops in because they don't have the fertilizer, and their soil
is already worn out and burned up.
It is, and that's all hooked to the World Bank and all of the global economics that's so screwed up, and the greed and the oil, and it's all. Oh God! And then combine that with the droughts that are going on in New Zealand and Australia, and the loss of species that we're experiencing. That I read there's about 90% of the pandas in China are threatened because of the quake. They've gathered up some, but they've just taken off to they've scattered to the hills, or they were killed, or they're starving, or whatever. So we're losing that, and officially the Caribbean monk seal is extinct now. I mean, they've been tracing it since about the 60s, but they're completely extinct now down in the Caribbean. But there's a few left in Hawaii and I think the Mediterranean. But when we're losing species on the planet at such an alarming rate, and we don't pay the dead zones in the coral reefs in the ocean, and the, what was it, John had a big story about the acres and acres and acres of plastic out in the Southern Pacific Ocean. It's pretty awful.
And then
when you want to grow your own food, I ran across something the other day that I thought, oh God, what's next? I know about mold. Witness my cough in my lungs, my upper lungs. It just in the Lancet, the medical journal out of England, a farmer had died in England, and his particular story, because they've been treating him for a year or two for tuberculosis and a bunch of other stuff, and come to find out that he'd been working in his garden, in quite a sizable garden, with compost, and there's some kind of fungus that wood rot and compost produces that caused this. It's a very, very toxic fungus.
And I remember when my mom was in intensive care down at the University of Alabama, Birmingham, my father became acquainted with a family of a woman who was there for a lung transplant.
Mm-hmm.
And her lung transplant had been occasioned by exactly what you're describing. She was a gardener, and she was out, she was always out on her knees in the dirt. And had picked up precisely that, and it completely burned up her lungs, and she had to have a transplant.
Yeah, well, this guy didn't make it because they didn't catch what it was in time. So I guess that's just kind of a heads up to people who are gardening. If you're new at gardening and you don't know about these things, just wear masks and be careful around the wood rot in your compost, because the organic, that fungus is extremely toxic. And
there's so many things that we don't know because we've gotten away from all that kind of thing. I never gave, sometimes if you leave a sack of potatoes laying around, there's a couple in the bottom of the bag, they'll start to sprout eyes and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, well, frankly, I'd given thought to, well, what the hell, I'll plant them. And just because the inner tubes are there and, you try to use them to your benefit,
mm-hmm.
I started looking up stuff, and lo and behold, If you plant a store-bought potato, there's a possibility that you can introduce a virus into your soil that can never be gotten rid of. Because they're, I guess they're managed on the giant potato farms by petrochemical-based the pesticides and such like as that. Mm-hmm. But ordinary soil is not fit to deal with it.
Right. I think that the old-timers call that. It sours the soil, sours the garden. You don't.
Yeah.
So, so we're damned if we do, damned if we don't. I had another little, it was a kind, not a chuckle, but it was kind of like one of those, oh my God moments. Tom Hartman was broadcasting from New York City last week or early this Friday. Maybe it was the beginning of this week or late last week. He had his laptop at he was at the UN, broadcasting from the UN at some conference or something. And his laptop got hacked on UN Wi-Fi. I thought, God, what's going on? It's everywhere.
Yes, it is, truly.
Oh, God. Anyway,
those are hard to get. Those are hard to get well from.
But yeah, it is not funny. It just happened to be funny to me at the time, though, because it's just like you go to the UN and you're using the Wi-Fi there, and you get your whole laptop gets hacked, and he was not amused anyway. But where was I going to go with the food thing? I guess that was all that really stuck out this week.
The thing is though, Kate, like I said earlier, everything is connected. Like Tom Robbins said, everything is part of it. Mm-hmm. And you know, the next time that we hear some godforsaken repiglickin saying it's your money, I want to give you a tax cut. Well, you know what? Okay, so you're gonna give your buddies in the top 1% earner class or top 1% ownership class a humongous tax break, and you're gonna send me a $300 rebate against next year's tax return.
Mm-hmm.
That's gonna mean that I'm gonna be out $800 on tires from the potholes that aren't gonna get filled because the money's not flowing downhill from Washington to the states anymore.
Mm-hmm. And water's not flowing downhill either. Even though it's kind of Mother Nature is such a bitch because we're being so nastier to our planet, but the water table in the Oglala Aquifer has dropped 100 feet in Texas and Kansas and Oklahoma. 100 feet.
And
that's not a regenerating system. A lot of the aquifer in the thousands and thousands of acres that it covers in all those states is covered with caliche, and that's not permeable. It can't be impregnated by water. The water just lays on top. There's just like a few holes in the aquifer that can be regenerated by surface water. And so we're just sucking the aquifer dry, and there's thousands and thousands of wells in Texas and Oklahoma up into Kansas that are dry.
Mm-hmm.
And so those farmers who are raising all of our food and our cattle have just gone to low-yield, dry-land farming, and that's about it, you know. And so we think, well, you know, we're the breadbasket of wrong. The breadbasket's got big holes in it, and there's not going to be any food. I'm sorry. It's just not going to be any food.
And we've made it worse by virtue of a combination of effects. You know, the so-called housing bubble was created on the backs of former American farmland that was turned into McMansion subdivisions.
Mm-hmm.
And in conjunction with that, I guess it was 2004 when the statistic first hit, and I remember it well because I remember holding the story in my hand. This was back when I still printed stories and killed trees. habits are hard to break, Kate. But I remember looking down at it, and it was a story about the fact that for the first time in American history in 50 years, we had become a net importer of food.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That you know, this nation, which has fed done its best in its better times to feed the starving of the world, that we ourselves imported more food than we produced.
Yep.
And you know, I went home and watched CNN and you know, all the other stuff. And no, not a word. Check the newspaper. Mm-hmm. Not a peep.
No.
And you know what? That is real news, Kate.
Yeah. That's what's scary to me is the blind ignorance out of, I don't mean that as a criticism, but just the blind ignorance of the population is what's real spooky to me, because if you don't know what's coming, how are you going to get out of the way? Or...
We've screwed up the corn crop with this ethanol dodge, and it is a dodge. I mean, I'm all for getting off of, you know, carbon-based fuels and blah, 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 blah. But the ethanol thing is a big fraud, and we've screwed up the corn crop with that such that corn farmers are now planting the vast majority of this number two field grade corn that you can't eat, you can't roast, you can't boil, you can't mush it, you can't grind it into meal, and you can't mill it into grits.
Nope.
All you can do is frack it in a refinery similar to what they do to oil and turn it into ethanol.
Change the molecular structure of it in the cat cracker and make it, yeah. But I was in the Family Dollar following the lady down the aisle with my cart, and she's changing the prices on. I said, well, excuse me, let me get ahead of you, so when you're changing those prices, I'll get the lower one. And she laughed, and I looked at the corn, the little jiffy cornmeal, corn muffin boxes.
Right.
45 cents. I said, well, golly. Just raise the price of that damn cornbread and put it in. Just don't put that damn corn in them gas tanks. And she said, that's right. I said, we used to pay 8 cents for these boxes of cornmeal. And she said, mm-hmm. So,
One of my favorite things was that Jiffy corn muffin mix when Mom would make it and serve it up with a bowl of beans, because it was kind of sweet.
Yeah.
Had some
it.
Sugar in it. And, yeah.
Food porn.
they've already been doing it in the chat room. I'm used to it by now.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm just gonna. Yeah, I'll finish the show and go have me a big bowl of gruel.
Not made out of corn, that's for damn sure. Blackwater, there's San Diego lost their battle against Blackwater.
Yeah, I saw that.
Blackwater had wanted to do the chicken farm about 40 miles out from San Diego, and they gave up on that. I don't know who brought them down on that one, but a district court judge in San Diego okayed their bid for a facility down toward the border, down south of San Diego. She said,
well, they can take target practice on Mexicans.
She said that the company would stand to lose. It would do considerable financial damage to the company. They assert that they would lose, I don't know, $54 billion or some shit, I don't know, in government contracts if they didn't have this facility. So now they've got this big, huge, I don't know, they described it, I didn't care, but they're supposedly to train Border Patrol and the Navy and Highway Patrol for in counterterrorism, blah, blah, blah. I thought, oh, God, San Diego lost. Too bad. But it's been quite a long, ongoing battle. But Blackwater's just asserting itself all over the country.
Well, that's because they're going to become the private military of the authoritarian fascist class.
They already are. And and
they're going to be used to get around the Posse Comitatus Act.
That's right. We're just getting dumbed down, and we're getting used to seeing people in the black fatigues and the big black Hummers. And
well, I'm one of those people who won't and can't get used to it.
Well, there was a pretty chilling story out of New York City. NYPD sergeants now, for years, like I think it's since 84 or later, that they've had to keep their tasers in the trunk of their cars, and because they were the larger ones that are about the size of a flashlight, and of their, you know, the big flashlights. And now the company here in Scottsdale scaled them down and made more efficient, smaller ones, and now they're hanging on their belts. They're no longer in the trunk. So NYPD sergeants are all...
Oh, yeah, and there have been several court cases where the manufacturer, Taser, what are they, Taser International or whatever, has done real yeoman work at getting to judges and providing expert witnesses. And I've seen two or three court cases lately where the coroner was overruled or an appeal was overruled, mm-hmm. and some activist judge, there's that phrase, you know, the real activists are the right-wingers, and we all know that, has ruled that the man's death was not caused by using the taser. In fact, I actually saw this. His death was more likely precipitated after he had been tasered when he was placed on the ground and had the breath knocked out of him in the effort to subdue him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see, it's his fault for he lost his breath. It was just lost. It wasn't yet. Yeah, I can't find my breath.
Yeah. And they're wanting to pull the National Guard. I don't know how much this is in the news, but they want to pull the National Guard off of the border down here in Arizona and California and Texas. I mean, I don't know about Texas and California, just Arizona. They were supposed to, they built like 17 miles of fence for like $80 bazillion, and the Guard has never been in law enforcement. They've always been administrative support, blah, 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 with the Minutemen and all the blah, blah.
The minute men?
Yeah, right. And but what's interesting that one of our congresspeople here in the state from up north by the Grand Canyon said, well, I think we should keep them on the border. This is the chiller. In that story, it was from Britain, in that newspaper story, buried way down like third paragraph from the bottom, one sentence, Senator, I don't even know who it was, from Virginia, said, oh, I think we need to pull them and because we need them back in our cities. Next paragraph. Oh, God. Mike Reagan was calling for the assassination of somebody who was communicating with people in Iraq, with military people in Iraq, with asserting that the 9/11 was an inside job, guys, and the anti-war sentiment and everything. And Reagan just went into a diatribe. It was so frightening, and he's calling for this guy should be taken out and shot. And he ended the diatribe with, and I'll buy the bullet. And I thought, whoa.
Oh, it's all over the country. St. John's City, I guess, which is somewhere in St. John's City in Florida. By the way, I mispronounced Brevard. Nobody lets me get away with anything around here.
I didn't correct you because it's your show.
Yeah, sorry. Never been there. I wonder if they've got bazaars and rabbits in Brevard, but never mind. But anyway, St. John City, Florida, there's a law enforcement. Wait a minute. Okay, let me see if I've got this right. Yeah, St. John's County, Florida, Sheriff's Department is putting out with the blessing of the sheriff there. T-shirts that target Iraq war and occupation dissenters. On the front, there is a picture of a kneeling shooter with a rifle aimed, you know, just a silhouette, white on black. And on the back of the T-shirt, it says, if you can't stand behind our troops, do us all a favor and stand in front of them.
We're getting prepared.
The sheriff down there is fond of calling people who protest the war scumbags. He has told his officers to take DNA swabs of anyone they pull over for any reason. He has suggested setting up an internment camp for the homeless population and wants to enforce a curfew in what he calls the black section of the city. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
That was in my stacks last week, wasn't it, about the parking lots in Santa Barbara, you know, for the homeless women. That seven out of seven. Well, that just, we can't keep putting out that kind of negative energy without it coming back to bite us in the butt. So there is an upside to anybody who's looking for a new career. You want to get out of the city and go to the farm. The bison industry is recruiting new ranchers because there's not enough bison to meet the demand for the food, for the meat. The meat happens to be delicious. And
yeah, oh golly, yes.
Oh,
just don't overcook
it. Love bison. There's just not enough demand. I mean, there's not enough herds to keep up with the demand, and they called it a Bison 101 website where you could go and see what it took to get started. And you just have to do the initial outlay for land, or if you already had it. But they don't eat like the beef, like the feedlots that are just a few miles upwind of me. And so, I mean, I've got feedlots all around me, and it's thing. But
when the wind blows just right, you know it too.
Sure do. What startled me was that the last year, the demand is getting higher and higher, and they butchered for meat for sale, retail, for 50,000 head last year, as opposed to 128,000 a day of beef cattle. What is that doing to our environment?
Mm-mm. A little bit. Yeah, you got to hear this. Just to back you up just a minute, back to Florida for a second, Kate. Also in St. Augustine, there's a group called St. Augustine People for Peace and Justice.
Mm-hmm.
They were visited by Sergeant Michelle Perry of the St. Augustine Police Department. And she told them that they will ticket, that the department will ticket anyone, any motorist who honks for peace.
Oh, Michelle, you're way out of line.
Yeah, and I wouldn't want to be the one who takes blowing the horn is a political statement up to Fat Tony Scalia in the Supreme Court. No.
No.
Yeah, I mean, if bong hits for Jesus gets upheld, you know, Houston, we got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Kate, we have done this for an hour, dear.
We have gone on. I see it's the top of the hour, and I was just going to say, there's one little piece of soft news, a little kicker, a little piece of soft news, that last month, the last flight out of New Zealand to McMurdo, Camp McMurdo,
yes,
Antarctica, delivered 16,500 condoms. Sun doesn't come up until August. It's going to be a nice, long winter.
Good reason to have them.
Mm-hmm. So I'll just be waiting here for the sun to come up in the skylight. Bye.
Talk to you later, Kate.
Bye.
Bye now. Quick break. If you're on hold, stay that way. I just need a quick break. These things happen. We'll come right back and get right to the phones. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. This is The American Discussion, the revival of the American debate, and the American dialogue. And it all happens because of you. Coming right back.
tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yes, indeed. Three lines lit up. We'll get to them one by one by one. And a couple of lines open if you want to jump in. Yeah, we've got about 50 minutes of solid conversation left. You want to be part of it? You know the number, 877-443-2366, toll free. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Just that easy. As we head into the weekend, and we do, in fact, go almost straight away back to the phones. Quick email for you. I love this. You heard this a couple of minutes ago, the clip that I shared with Kate from that great comedy, The In-Laws.
Jesus. I don't know what people are going to do when a six-pack of Budweiser costs $1,200.
Well, that'll be off.
Yeah, it will be. Our pal Cindy writes in and says, we're listening around the supper table. Gerald said, when beer is that expensive, the rednecks will revolt. My God, I can't afford no more beer. Let's get them, boys! If that's the wake-up call, fine by me. Right. And to the phones. To the phones we go. And we have Susan with us. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
I'm here.
Hey, how are you?
Well, I'm just fine, but I got to tell you, when beer gets to be that expensive, no, the revolt won't happen. Won't happen. What will happen is the moonshiners will be back in force. Never really went away.
Got to light it on the table to see what color it burns. If it burns green, don't you drink it. I remember once upon a time, I can't remember if it was my mom or my dad in the hospital. This wasn't one of the big ones. This was, it might have been when my dad's thumb tendon broke or, when my mom got pins in her wrist or whatever. It wasn't one of the big ones. Either mom or dad was across the hall from a boy who had just had a nice brand new plastic stomach installed.
Yeah.
Because he had burned up the one he had, the one God gave him, from drinking bad moonshine liquor. It was a dry county I grew up in at the time, and that was one of the sad results of living in a county that was controlled by the religion industry at that point. We would have referenda every so often, every 4 years or so. Can't we just sell a beer in Lauderdale County and the Lauderdale Citizens for Decency and Morality, by some preacher, would mount the campaign against it. And they were always funded by the local bootleggers.
Well, of course.
Yeah. Charming.
Yeah, oh. And the funny thing is, let's face it, beer you can make legally on your own even now.
Oh, sure, you can make gallons and gallons and gallons of beer on your own now legally, as long as you're not selling it. And you can also make gallons and gallons of liquor as long as you're not selling it. Very few people know that. And the ATF doesn't want them to know that.
Well, of course not, beer.
Personal use.
another thing that Kate mentioned, you guys were talking about growing your own food, and you mentioned planting a store-bought potato, which is not a good thing.
No, you can't.
Yeah. And what you do is, first of all, stay away from the store-bought seeds completely. They're not worth buying. Get online and buy heritage seeds.
Heirloom seeds, heritage seeds, yeah.
Seed.
Yeah.
You can buy potatoes. I got a whole great big batch of them growing in my backyard right now. Seeds of all types and descriptions for almost anything. And then you just gather the seeds when you harvest.
And you do what people have done since the beginning of agriculture. You save seed.
Exactly.
I've got in fact I've got a bunch of Mayacoba seed put back for if I ever get a garden in.
Yeah. You know, it's just a matter of being willing to say, you know, go through, save the seeds, figure out where you're going to put them, making sure that they're safe, and then next year you're set. And you don't have to worry about, well, what's it going to cost me next year? It's not going to cost you a thing.
Yeah, much to the chagrin of Monsanto.
Well, Monsanto can go, nah.
Well, actually, they can't, because they can afford to buy a few congressmen. You can't.
The main reason I called,
yes,
is to tell everybody to get on the horn tomorrow and call their congressman, their senator, because our dear Congress is on the verge of selling us out again.
How so this time?
FISA.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Of course, they won't be in tomorrow. Tomorrow being Saturday.
Well, yeah, Monday. By tomorrow, I meant Monday. They're on the verge of passing something with telecom immunity in it.
Sorry, bastards. What else can you say? Sorry, bastards.
How about son of a...
those two. But I, because I am gender sensitive, I try now always to say self-made, son of a. Yeah. Like stagging buck, both ranking.
That I can even say on FCC air.
Yeah, on censored public airwaves, absolutely.
Yeah, but you know what I actually want to say is not considered polite in mixed company.
Right, and let's remember, some people are still dining. So
yes, I am.
And little Timmy and little Susie might be in the room.
I am so sick of these.
No good.
Dinos.
Yep. Blue dog Democrats.
I don't expect any better out of the stupid Republicans. It's a snake. You expect it to bite you.
Oh yeah, it's in my yeah. Lady, you knew it was in my nature.
Democrats that really kicked me off.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, I don't know if people will pick up their phones about impeachment. We all know it's for the good of the country, but we're all...
I already have, and I'm going to keep at it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You do it once, and you do it the next day, 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 until you are an absolute... And look, you do it once and go away...
They ignore you.
Sure. You know, letters, you know, and it's not just phone calls, it's letters to the editor. It's you know, why will Congressperson so-and-so not honor the oath they took?
Yeah. You have to get to the point with, say, your congressman or your senator, where they hear your voice, and like with me, with my congressman, and they say, oh, hi, Susan, how you doing today?
Yeah.
You don't have to give your name. Anything. They know your voice.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, maybe get creative about it. Well, I'm calling because I noticed it was day 1212 that my congressman still hasn't stood on his hind legs and supported the Constitution by demanding impeachment. Wondering when he's going to do it.
I've got a different hook. It always involves a question that has somewhere in that question the sacrifice of a baby and George Bush.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly.
What's it going to take? George Bush cutting a baby's throat in sacrifice in the middle of Pennsylvania Avenue before you guys get serious?
Yeah.
That's all I was like.
Right. And wear them, you know, we need to wear them out day after day after day after day. So, yeah, you're on the right track, Susan.
And keep at it, folks.
Exactly. Exactly. And thanks for the heads up about the FISA thing. You can just sort of tack that onto the end of the end of the phone call.
Oh, I've got a whole list. I just go, you know, I just start at the top and work right on through.
Yep. Get multiple birds with a single stone.
Oh yeah, and they're taking notes. With me at least, they take notes because I come back, I call back, and I check up on them.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, Susan, I'm going to roll along. Try to get through the blinkies here.
Okay. You have a nice night, nice weekend, and love to Agnes the kids.
All right. Thank you so much, Susan. Same back.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And let's see. Sarge. Hey, Sarge, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Bob? I hope you're close to eating again.
No, no, I'm still on clear liquids and gruel and, you know, fun stuff.
Man, I'll tell you what, maybe we need to get you out here to Arizona and let Monique's cook and fatten you up.
No, trust me, it ain't the fattening I need, it's the leaning. I've set a goal. I'm going to get back into a pair of size 36 jeans. That's what's going to happen. That's the good thing that's going to happen out of all this starvation.
Yeah, make something good happen. That's a good idea. Yeah, what I wanted to say was, hey, it was nice of you to have Dennis on today. It's kind of pathetic, and it's a commentary when Tim Russert's death gets more news coverage than 35 articles of impeachment.
Ain't that the truth? Ain't that the truth, Sarge?
I mean, I'm not a Russert fan by any stretch of the imagination, but come on, there's only so much you can say, man, you know? What about the 35 articles of impeachment, for Christ's sake?
And you know, is Andrea Mitchell going to talk? No. Brian Williams? No. I mean, has even Keith Olbermann brought him up? They took my MSNBC away on my cable system, so I just don't know anymore.
Yeah, I think he did. I'm not 100% sure, but it seems like I heard that he did have something on it. But, you know, it's just kind of, look, it's too late to do anything. You're not going to get the man kicked out of office. But what people don't realize is it's not about getting him out of office. What it is about is stopping these people, getting them from ever holding a public office again, to keep them from coming back like they did after Clinton let them off. You know, because some of the same ones that are stirring up the stuff.
In addition to that, Sarge, it also prevents Bush from pardoning these thugs.
That's true. That's true. And it's just dumb not to support impeachment, even now. And, you know, kudos to Dennis, because at least it's on the congressional record now. And
yeah,
that in itself is worth something, because history's going to look back, and they're going to look at us, and they're going to say, what was wrong with these people? Hadn't they read the history of the Germans before Hitler took over?
Yeah, well, if there's any kind of honest history written, Sarge, and that's what I was going on about, some of that's going to have to be addressed to us, the people of the United States. Although I find it interesting, John Perry, who I get an email from him every now and then, he was on the show once upon a time, and I had a little exchange recently, sent me a link to a USA Today online poll. The demand for impeachment on that online poll was about 84%. Okay? Interestingly, MSNBC has another similar poll, and again, the demand for impeachment is about 84%. And we're talking about 9,000-10,000 people voting, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you think, and one of the things that John Perry pointed out was that if you consider what is deemed to be a scientific poll, like what the polling companies do, they generally call, randomly selected, supposedly, about 1,300 households. And their scientific poll has a margin of error of plus or minus 3 or 4% usually. Okay? So that means whatever number they come up with, you can either add 3 or 4 or subtract 3 or 4, and you know you've got the range. Now, these...
And one thing that isn't in those polls, and something people aren't aware of, cell phones don't get those off.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Very much.
So, younger Americans who might be paying attention and want it done are probably not going to be polled. Only people with old landline technology are going to be queried. But what's the thing that John Perry pointed out to me, though, is that even if you assume for a moment, well, that's an online poll, MSNBC and USA Today, that 84%, that's an online poll. Okay. Well, but still, you can only vote once based on cookies and IP addresses. Okay. So you've really got to go the extra mile to vote twice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
yeah,
you take that into consideration, and you take that number, 84% of those responding to the survey saying that they want impeachment. Okay, let's let's say that it's not as scientific as a telephone poll taken by a professional polling organization. So let's give it a 20% margin of error. That is still 64% of the American people aching, yearning, demanding impeachment.
Well, I tell you, that's one thing I had Shirley Golub on before, and she's, you know, it's a shame that she didn't get more support out in the area, but we have got to send the message to Pelosi, and maybe it's through Cindy Sheehan, but we've got to send Pelosi a message, and I have called her office and told them this. She does not have the option of taking impeachment off the table. It's not her call.
Yeah, not unless she's willing to say the same thing about the Constitution that George Bush did, that it's just a GD piece of paper.
Yeah, I mean she in fact I wonder why someone hasn't talked about having her removed from the office, because she is guilty of violating the same oath that George Bush is guilty of. That makes her a co-conspirator.
Well, it certainly makes her complicit, and of course California has referendum and recall, Sarge.
Yeah.
She could be recalled from office if there were enough people in her district who chose to do so. And I mean, you mentioned Cindy Sheehan. There's no guarantee Cindy Sheehan's going to be on the ballot.
Right.
Because anybody trying to petition their way onto a ballot in California has a mighty long odds against them. They got to get 1% of registered voters voting in the last election. 1% of the number of registered voters who voted in the last election. And that's a tall number in a district like Nancy Pelosi represents. And, of course,
it's
she represents...
enough to run against an incumbent, especially a powerful one, with all the power that...
Right, and to try to get on the ballot, and I'm sure that Nancy Pelosi is quietly doing what she can to keep that from happening. So it may turn out that if Cindy is not successful, that the only choice the people in that district have in November will be Nancy Pelosi or some bug-eyed, crazy-ass Republican. And that's a hard pill to swallow.
I tell you, it's crying over spilled milk now, but I surely wish they had gone with Shirley Golub, because I got to know her, and man, the people made a mistake there. Because this is, she put out this rubber chicken ad. I don't know.
Oh yeah, that I did. Yeah, the ad that they wouldn't run.
Right, and then, well, they finally did run it. She finally did get them to run it. But that ad, it was potent. It really told what Pelosi is. But I guess the people there are kind of like the people here in Phoenix and in Maricopa County, Arizona, with this Arpaio. They believe this falsehood, like Arpaio is saving us from the Mexicans, when the Phoenix police arrest more, and by far, more non-citizens than Arpaio does, and yet Arpaio's getting all this credit for it when he's not really doing it.
And all told, and yet, there are probably more Anglos arrested than people of Hispanic descent.
Yeah, but these people just... they want to believe
Well, they want to believe within the framework of their own bigotries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know and I'm getting off on this thing, but the immigration thing here, yeah, it's a problem. But you're not going to solve the problem by throwing hate at it. All you're going to do is create more of a problem. And I see things here, gradually, day by day, growing more like what I saw in Mississippi during the Jim Crow era growing up, and I know you saw it in Alabama. And people have got to stop being so stupid about this thing and start saying, we've got to find intelligent solutions instead of saying, well, I'm going to vote for so-and-so because he's protecting me from whoever I hate.
Well, exactly. And, you know, it's the eternal struggle, the eternal uphill struggle of labor as well, Sarge, because labor's problem has always been getting workers to understand that working people aren't the problem. And you know what? Whether you call them illegal aliens or undocumented, yada, 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 what they are, Sarge, they are working people. and they're working hard. And the trick is to get people to stop blaming the working people. Blame them. You know, if you want to call it a problem and say that it is a problem, then the problem is made manifest by the people who pay the low wages that the these people are forced by dint of necessity to take. There's where
and
the problem lies.
We got to quit being scared of our government. You know, this nation, we're so scared to take on our government. Whereas in other countries, I think France is one of them, the government steps out of line. The government fears the people.
Well, exactly, because you know, if the transit workers go on strike in France, the judges go on strike, and the teachers go on strike, and the grain millers go on strike, and you know, things get fixed. Sure, absolutely. You're absolutely correct, Sarge.
And I hear people out here, you know, talk about the bus system. You've heard me talk about it before. But people say, well, they'll go after us if we get too hard on them. They don't go after us, but they can't go after everybody. Sooner or later, they're going to have to back away and give in because there's far more of us than there is of them, and yet people just don't realize the power of activism.
And there is a concerted effort made, Sarge, to make sure that people continue not to understand that power. You know, and it begins with understanding the Constitution. You said, you know, people don't understand that they can that they have the power. You know, there's a specific petition for redress of grievances clause in the I believe First Amendment, and that's very serious. But it will go away and under this right wing Tinkerbell theory of the Constitution. If we just don't believe it's there, that it isn't, it'll go away if people don't assert the right. Unused rights go away.
Well, you know, like we're gonna have a petition up to do away with your marriage to Agnes.
Oh, I saw that in the chat room. Yeah, she's gonna love that. I done told on you.
Oh, I'm in trouble with Agnes, I guess.
Well, I told on everybody. Agnes, they're after our marriage, honey. She said, I'll straighten them up.
I'm gonna let you go and wish Agnes my best. Oh, I was just kidding.
All right. You take care, Sarge. Have a good weekend.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
You too.
Have a great show Sunday. Sarge can be heard every Sunday on KPHX out of Phoenix and Nova M. And onward, you still there, Preston?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for your patience.
Sure thing. I've just been enjoying listening in on the conversation, and, well, so many things everybody was touching upon. Kate mentioned the need for more bison ranchers.
Yes.
Apparently, the demand is so high. It's good to hear that animal coming back. You know, it was on the verge of extinction, and here it is coming back. And
you know, something that was pointed out to me via email a couple of minutes ago, I'm glad you mentioned it, Preston, because it is worth it. This is noteworthy. You can't make a bison eat corn. They eat grass. You can put corn in front of them all day long, and they won't touch it.
Interesting. You know, I wonder how the cows kind of feel or what they think about the feed that we tend to give them. I mean, so much of the corn that we grow, we can barely eat ourselves.
Yes.
I mean,
well, when you feed a cow corn, you have to then what it does is it immediately begins to wreck that multiple stomach system that a cow has, because a cow can't make a cud out of corn. And you know, we all know that a cow chews its cud, and it's, you know, swallowed and re-swallowed and re-swallowed. And
was it to activate enzymes or something?
Corn just doesn't have in it what grass does, and it's the abdominal digestive tract of a bovine is not, I hate to say, designed, because that plays into the freaks, but it's not meant. It did not evolve. There we go. The digestive tract of a cow did not evolve to eat grains. So when you eat, when you feed the grain, when you feed the corn to the cow, you immediately have to start pumping antibiotics and steroids into it to keep the digestive tract functioning, because it just causes total wreckage. And then that's why, oh boy, I pity the people eating dinner. Dadgummit. That's why the effluvium of a cow on corn is so vastly different from one that is eating grass. You know, this is another one of those horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner moments, because Rick raises a few beeves, and he could probably tell you the difference between. He can tell you what happens to a corn that you put on, or a cow that you put on corn.
You know, another factor that increases the amount of antibiotics is the way they're packed in these,
Absolutely, yeah. Disease spreads like wildfire in the cow schwitzes of the Midwest.
Yeah, in the chicken houses, all that stuff. So, yeah, but again, back to the feed part. So we have all this corn out there that, you know, it's not like sweet corn where you could boil it.
No.
It's this, you know, for some of your...
And it's not even the so-called field corn that you can make palatable by pouring a little molasses into the boil. No.
Mm-hmm.
No. Number two field grade corn is absolutely physically inedible to a human being.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for nothing but fracking and turning into ethanol and high... Well, the big fracture job is in the creation of high fructose corn sweetener.
Yeah.
That stuff that is... more and more being seen as responsible for the diabetes epidemic in this country.
Yep.
And so, but...
Yeah, what an incredibly counterproductive use of land resources and water resources, and it's really a shame. So, you know, you were talking about the price of food in some of these schools. You know, there's a part of me that feels that it's problematic, certainly, if they don't have the budgets. But it might be helpful in some ways in that if people are investing more in the school lunches, maybe they're transitioning to family farmers and stuff like that. I know that's a scene in part of Morgan Spurlock's film. What's it called?
Supersize Me.
Yeah, and he goes to that kind of that school that's doing this alternative dieting for kids, especially kids who have had.
Is that the school in the California Bay Area?
It may be that one. I don't remember where it was located. I know actually these are developing across the country though, so it could have been any number of cities.
Yeah, part of the whole Eat Local movement.
Yep. And the slow food movement, and there are all these different factions of it. And I wonder, you know, if you know what the diets of the cows, if it isn't, they probably don't like the taste of it any more than we do as well, but you know, it's all they're offered. And it probably affects their behavior that they're getting juiced up on all these steroids, and then it increases the amount of infections they get. And it's really abuse in so many ways. And I'm glad there's this movement towards, you know, free range grass fed meat and bison and any other number of alternatives. I saw on a show in China, I guess they eat donkeys.
I saw that too.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw, what was it, donkey tail soup?
Yep.
Mm-mm.
Wasn't that the Andrew Zimmern show?
Yes, it was.
Strange foods, yeah. So, and likewise, you know, there are these crises going on, and at the same time there are these opportunities. And somebody asked Barack Obama during a Q&A session, he made a comment about how he felt, in some ways he felt it was maybe a good thing that fuel prices go up. Not entirely, and it's harming a lot of people, but at the same time, it's kind of pressuring towards alternatives and discussion of alternatives. And Barack made a great comment. He said something along the lines of, you know, it's ridiculous that this country has, like, among all the Western, you know, developed countries, we've got the most raggedy mass transit system there is. And I thought that was a great comment and very accurate. And Sean Hannity was furious about it. he's where I heard it. He played the clip, and he started going off on, he does not understand how it's the car that's the symbol of freedom.
And, oh, no.
Yeah. I mean, he's just reading memos from these PR agencies from the car and...
Yeah, they write them in Detroit, and it comes out of his mouth in New York.
And interestingly, it's like the louder he gets about it, the weaker he seems about it. He seems very insecure in what he's doing. He's getting a lot of heat from listeners. He'll mention it from time to time. You know, oh, gosh, you see all the emails I get, angry emails, you know, picking on poor little me, you know, our friendly fascist.
Oh, yeah. And see, one of the things that my congressman frequently gets right, while he hasn't come to the fore and done his duty by the Constitution with regard to impeachment, and he certainly stands to be criticized for his positions on mountaintop removal. He does get it right where, and he sits on the Transportation Committee or Subcommittee, he's the ranking member and the chairman or some such, Nick Rahal.
Okay.
He busted his ass in the last few days to help get the Amtrak funding extended.
Great. Great.
And there's a bill that provides $15 billion over 5 years to keep Amtrak going. $3 billion miserable, measly dollars a year. And yet they're claiming that it, and I'm not blaming him for the, it's probably as much as he can get.
Yeah, but it's pathetic. It should be so much more.
If it was $150 billion, it might actually start making a difference. But they're saying that there's money in there, to help localities expand rail service, to help cities and states provide rail service where it doesn't exist. And it seems like such a no-brainer, Preston, that we would, you know, $4.10 a gallon here in the hills, and I know it's a lot worse elsewhere.
Yeah.
It seems like a no-brainer that we would pump money into it, but, of course, the godless, soulless, motherless Republican Party despises the idea of public transport and mass transit because, frankly, the godless, soulless, motherless Republican Party despises the public and despises the masses.
Yep.
I mean, I don't see any other way of putting it except that.
Despise them and fear them. And
because if you can, see, if you can limit the mobility of the plebs, you know, we're the plebs.
Yeah.
If you can limit the mobility of the plebs, you can make them more economically desperate. You know, if you can't go where the good jobs are, or if you can't go somewhere that go and get a job in a state that still has some degree of regard for organized labor, well, then that just makes a greater number of people who have to like it or lump it. And that's exactly, I forget who it was that coined the term cheap labor conservatives, but so much of so-called conservatism you can boil down to an effort on the part of the people who call themselves conservative to make sure that the middle class gets squeezed a little bit tighter every year and that labor becomes a little bit cheaper.
Yeah. I saw the mayor of, I think it was Kansas City, on C-SPAN recently at some transportation committee hearing in D.C., and he was making a great point about how, you know, if you talk to people about it, they're very open to it, mass transit. And they tried to raise a tax, or they're planning to raise a tax that would be a quarter of a cent or something like that for $10 purchase or $100 or whatever it is. And he said on average that will come out to be, I think he was using like middle class, you know, $40,000 person or so. They'll pay like $200, but they will save, you know, if they themselves, the adults or the kids in the family, can replace our trips with a trip on light rail or bus, that by the end of the year, they'll more than make up that $200 in the tax. They'll be saving, you know, $300 or $400. So, you know, it's financially prudent as well.
Absolutely.
There's a political aspect to this, too. Mass transit's very much more community-oriented. You're there with your neighbors. Oftentimes, they're fun. People playing bridge on the trolleys that we used to have all over this country. We had this wonderful trolley system. People could chat. People could get work done.
Right, because you're not sitting by yourself in traffic. That song I played after Kate's phone call, Synchronicity 2 from the Police, there's a line in there, people trapped like lemmings into shiny metal boxes.
Yes, exactly.
And, you know, you don't have conversations with your neighbor when you're sitting in traffic. Mostly you just sit there and you stew and you steam. And it's so much nicer not to have to pay attention to the road and what some idiot's about to, you know, he's cutting me off, and then the road rage kicks in. All right, son of a... And it's enjoyable.
Yeah. And at the same time, I remember hearing that Police song. I think I was in Omaha at the time, and it was coming over the kind of pop music station, and I was thinking, wow, this is kind of radical, and because there, I think I was with my mom at the time, and we were on the road, and I thought, there are these kind of radical moments that can slip in through art, even on the kind of worst commercial pop stations. But I don't know.
Well, the follow-up to that line, people trapped like lemmings in shiny metal boxes, the next line is contestants in a suicidal race.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's true. That story I had last night about the kids in the high school out El Camino High School in some area of suburban San Diego, the whole point behind what the fraud, the hoax, the intentional infliction of emotional distress that those school administrators did was to try to save lives that would be lost to drunken driving on prom night or graduation night or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you know that they are real tragedies in America. They are, every year we lose more people to car wrecks in America than we lost all of the Vietnam War, and we're just okay with it.
Yeah,
and
40,000 or so a year.
Yeah, and because of the collapse of the infrastructure, we can't keep up. We can't keep up with road maintenance and things like uneven shoulders, things like potholes. Work hell on tires, and blowouts happen, and people lose control, go flying into the median, the car flips. Awful things happen, and it's not always driver negligence. Sometimes it's sure. A function of how we treat the roads. And we've got more people on the roads in metropolitan areas. I mean, you're in Denver. I'm sure you're at least aware of it, even if you're not out driving in it. It's probably miserable between 4 p.m. and 7 p.m., and miserable between 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. on any given freeway in Denver, just like it is in any other American city.
It's really remarkable that there aren't more accidents. I mean, so often we can be very critical of fellow drivers. You know, stupid drivers is a common refrain, and anger and all that stuff. But if you think about it, with the speeds that are used, the blind spots that we have, the many things going on around us, animals and people maneuvering themselves and flat tires and things in the road. It's remarkable how people coordinate it in a way and don't have more horrendous accidents. It says something of intelligent drivers, and, I was in this city in Venezuela called Iquitos, and they didn't have like any stop signs or any traffic lights, and the streets were packed. Especially with these motorcycles with like a rickshaw seat in the back.
Right, yeah.
And they're very filthy. I mean, they're spewing out a lot of diesel. And so in that way, I didn't like them so much. And they're noisy as well. So I was kind of longing for the bicycle days. If they had them, I don't know if they used those so much. But still, it was amazing. And it was remarkable how people just do motion and eye contacts could just swirl around with very few accidents, and I saw no road rage. And you'd see these whole families on some of these bikes, five, six people at a time, and I don't know, I was just fascinated by it.
Well, each society and each culture figures it out for themselves. I remember long ago, oh God, longer than I care to admit, my one great wonderful trip overseas when I spent a couple of weeks up and down the Italian peninsula. And the first thing our tour guide said was, listen, you're not home anymore. There's no such thing as pedestrian right-of-way here.
Oh, no.
You know, when you go to cross the street, you know, wave your hands, you know, flip people off, whatever. You know, because otherwise, you know, but the funny thing was, if you watch the, you know, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. If you watch the Romans, they would walk out in front of cars almost without looking, and just expect them to stop.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, they did. And it was an amazing thing to behold. And I remember coming back home just completely transformed by it. Of course, it was the biggest place I'd ever been in my life, too. But just amazed at what I had beheld. But yeah, whether it's Venezuela or you know, you mentioned Venezuela, there are amazing things happening all over South America. Many lessons for us to learn, except for the fact that, you know, we're Americans. We don't learn no lessons from nobody. We teach the lessons, and it is that imperial hubris, and I don't think you can call it anything but that, Preston. Imperial hubris that leads us to the problems that we have. You know, you've got the Mitch McConnells and the Jim Inhofs and the Tom Coburns and the Jim DeMints and the rest of the freakazoids of the Republican Party in the Senate, who, if you start talking about infrastructure stuff, socialism, but they never stop to think for a minute about the socialized military that they bow and scrape to in terms of, and they're not even interested in making sure that they just want to pump the money into it. They don't care how they spend it.
Yeah.
I mean, right. we still have lower rank soldiers and sailors and Marines and so forth on food stamps. You know, with families trying to live on off base or on base housing, whatever, and able to shop at the PX and whatnot, and they're on food stamps. And frankly, for anybody who says, "I support the troops," to be able to tolerate that is, well, it's first and foremost, it is proof positive of the abject hypocrisy that's involved. But it's also proof that, once again, you know, they don't give a damn about the great mass of the American people.
No, and certainly not much about the great mass of people in so many parts of the world. I mean,
well, we had a lot of fun with it on the program, Preston. But you know, how much of what you just said, the truth of it, was borne out by that stupid ad that Jim Inhofe put out that was called Africa, where he said, it's hilarious. If you go back a couple of nights, it was Wednesday night's horn section where we had so much fun with it. But the script to this thing is just ridiculous. It's a campaign ad that Jim Inhofe put out as proof positive that, you know, he's a statesman and he's a problem solver. And I'm trying to pull up the script right now because it's just a beautiful thing. Because in trying to run this smarmy dodge on the people of Oklahoma, he proves his disdain for the people in the foreign countries that he's trying to say that he's tried to help.
Right.
Because he I'll have it in a second here. I've had to go through a couple of pages.
That's okay.
But just to bring the script up, not necessarily the audio. But again, the ad is called Africa, and it says something like 29 trips over 12 years to the hot spots, to the front, to Ethiopia, Zambia, Iraq, Ethiopia, Zambia, Iraq. 29 intense trips in 12 years to the front, to the saddest parts of Africa, to quietly get to know the leaders, to pray with them.
And
they just, you know, they're claiming that Iraq is in Africa.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. And also, this mission is to divert our attention about the ways in which these neoliberal trade policies are making these farmers in Africa so sad. You know, we treat them like they're just incompetent and they're corrupt and they don't have our modern technology, but what's really happening is their markets are being undercut by these massive agribusiness firms
and by loans from the World Bank. And you know, when the World Bank comes in, it's worse than having the Cosa Nostra come in and give you a loan.
Yep. That's what's so exciting, speaking of things going on in South America. They're developing this institution called the Mercosur, which is like Southern Bank, as an alternative to the World Bank and the IMF, and it's Venezuela and I think Argentina and Chile, maybe Brazil. Of course, it's making Wall Street very, very angry. So, you know.
Yeah, and sooner or later, Wall Street does, just, you know, just like any other organized crime mob, Wall Street eventually gets angry enough to start shooting.
Yeah, and it's like what Sarge was saying. You know, if these people get pushed too hard, you know, what's the likelihood of maybe, you know, there being some kind of violent response? And it's certainly there. It's interesting. Noam Chomsky has a tendency to completely discount it, which I find odd. And it does occur. Judy Berry and, you know, certainly many others. But as Sarge said, you know, there's so many of us. And Howard Zinn points that out in his book, something like a power no government can suppress or yeah. No government can stop, I think.
And it's always the question that you and I have discussed on a number of occasions about what information gets to the American people. I just had an email roll in from our buddy David in Tennessee talking about the police lyric you and I are discussing. He says, trapped in the shiny metal box, by yourself, no one to talk to, frustrated, dumbed down, more easily accepting of right-wing hate speech that is
yep.
always in your ear.
Yep. All those factors and Hannity whispering in your ear. And are you screaming?
Telling that, you know, you're in your car and your car defines you as an American. Burn more gas.
Right, right. And drill everything. He keeps saying that Anwar was created by Jimmy Carter. You know, he probably had a role in saving it, but it was initially created by Eisenhower, you know, the Republican. You know, they're against the party they claim to be a part of. You know, these whole concepts, you know, conservatives. Yeah, yeah. That's, you know, gluttony and you know, that sort of thing.
Well, yeah, they're the father of their party isn't the Lincoln or Eisenhower anymore, if it ever was. The father of the modern Republican Party, Preston, is a fictitious character. The father of the modern Republican Party is Gordon Gekko from Oliver Stone's Wall Street. Greed is good. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Preston, I've got to roll on. We're pretty much run up against the end of the program. I'm so glad you could call in. We could have a nice conversation this evening, and you didn't have to hurry along.
Likewise, and I want to mention Happy Father's Day. I had been speaking with Peter a couple weeks ago about the origins of Mother's Day, and it turns out it's this challenge to militarism.
Yes.
It started in West Virginia, but I learned recently, I'm reading about Father's Day on Wikipedia, about the origins of that also being in West Virginia.
Really? Now, see, I knew about Grafton, but I didn't know Father's Day's origins were here too.
Let me read two quick sentences. Is believed to have been inspired to celebrate fathers after the deadly mine explosion in nearby Monongah,
yeah, that okay. makes sense.
The prior December, this explosion killed 361 men, many of them fathers and recent immigrants to the United States from Italy. They're not sure, but, you know, that's the suggestion. And let's see, the first Father's Day celebration was on July 5th, 1908 in Fairmont, West Virginia.
Well, I'll be darned.
Yeah, so...
And you see that if you read up on the Monongah mine disaster, it's horrifying. And in fact, if you can get your hands on it, there is a brilliant documentary in the Ken Burns school of documentary making about West Virginia. It's narrated by Richard Thomas, you know, John Boy, and they talk about the Monongah disaster in some detail. And I think the widows were given $100 or $200 apiece, and they unearthed correspondence from the chief counsel or the president of the mine company who says, I consider this to be quite generous. You've got, there are still bodies in that hole that were never recovered. People buried in unmarked graves. people who were unidentifiable.
And one quick movie suggestion to you and your audience, The Assassination of Hugo Chavez. Greg Palast had a lot to do with producing that, and I think he interviews Chavez in the movie. And, you know, we have a lot of our attention on Iran, and that's appropriate, but I think also we need to keep an eye on developments in Venezuela. He's really being framed in a particular way that we've heard before about his terrorist support and his wanting to get uranium from Colombia and on and on and on. And, you know, some solidarity with the people, not just Chavez, but the entire movement.
Yes.
That's going on there, I think, is, you know, in our words and maybe some of our media purchases and stuff like that.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Preston, and have a great weekend.
Likewise, Bob.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And lest I forget, to all the dads out there, a very happy Father's Day to you. Enjoy it. And find a new level of connection with your sons and daughters out of it. Ferg and I used to go and play golf on Father's Day, but with my shoulder and neck being what it is, don't think they're going to be golfing Sunday. So maybe we'll just sit around and watch a little bit of the U.S. Open Father's Day tradition that it is. Yes, I like golf, okay? All right. All right, now let's see if we can do this very, very short time here, but let's try to... Oh, no, okay, you quit. Well, thanks for a wonderful week. Sorry it was a short one. Sorry I bailed out on Monday, but I've come to the conclusion that this is probably not a pinched nerve. It's probably more like ligament, tendon, and maybe even rotator cuff damage, because I figured out where it came from. Tried to use the tiller a couple of weeks ago, the one that I borrowed, because mine got disappeared. And the thing wasn't digging deeply enough and took off on me and just yanked the hell out of my shoulder and arm, and I think that's where this problem came from. Because I'm right-handed, and I probably had a stronger grip with my right. You know how it goes. So a wonderful week that was made all the more wonderful by you. Special thanks this evening to Congressman Dennis Kucinich for taking time out of what is obviously a very, very busy schedule to have a conversation with us. We do sincerely appreciate it, Congressman, and thanks to your staff for arranging the conversation. Thanks to everybody who contributes to keep the horn on the air. Many of you, the usual supporters of the horn, the happy few, have stepped up this month, and we are ever so grateful for it. But I also have to tell you that we are not even, again, the halfway mark of June will pass on Sunday, Father's Day. And unless something changes in the next 2 days, we will not be at the halfway point of our monthly fundraising goal of $2,000. If you've never contributed to the Horn and you do find this programming valuable, I sincerely ask you to step up and stand shoulder to shoulder with the rest of the folks who are dedicated to keeping conversation, information, dialogue, and discussion going in an independent, uncensored fashion. There's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. The website is down, so it's kind of hard to use that right now. But you can always use the snail mail address, which is 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV, 25801. Ben Birch also has a fundraiser going on. He needs your help as well, because he carries the streaming end of all this production and programming on his own and never sends a bill. He relies on the goodwill of liberals and progressives who value liberal progressive media every bit as much as we do here at the production end of the Horn. Thanks to the moderators in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, our bloggers. I don't thank them often enough. Thanks to John Fox, our webmaster, who is working desperately to make the website come back to life. the hard work that goes on to keep all of this going, the unremunerated hard work that goes on to keep all this going, is simply stunning. And you all have changed my life and Agnes's life for the better. For you have all made us, I know, better people. Up next, Strictly Confidential with the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.